Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Memorial Day weekend is the traditional kickoff to summer travel. Last year, 43 million Americans took their tradition to heart over the holiday. But this year, holiday travel was expected to be so light that AAA skipped its annual forecast for the first time in 20 years. Tariro Muzeziwa covers travel for the New York Times. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Good morning.
Good morning. Do you have any idea how many people did travel over the weekend? We were trying to look for it and couldn't find anything.
You know, it was hard to find an exact number for travel overall, but we do know how many people traveled by plane. Mm-hmm. So we know that, you know, on Friday, for example, which is the Friday before Memorial Day, usually a huge travel day, just under 350,000 people were screened by TSA. But, you know, a year ago, that was almost 3 million people. So that's a huge difference. And I haven't seen numbers this morning yet for how many people drove, but I suspect it's something similar. But, you know, probably more people feeling comfortable about getting in a car and driving somewhere versus getting on a plane. But that's a staggering difference.
So, yeah, exactly. Still, I know some people who traveled far north from Tucson to up by Orcas Island by Seattle, and they never even used a public bathroom. They packed all their food. The only thing they stopped for was gas.
I've heard a lot of that. It's like you don't want to stop anywhere. You just got to get from your house to your destination.
Yeah, especially if you're seeing people that want you to quarantine first, you know, if they have babies or something like that.
Right.
Do we know anything, any patterns to the air travel?
You know, we know that, you know, we saw sort of at the start of all of this back in like February and March, especially like March and April, significant dip in travel. Just people were not, everybody was staying home. And, you know, it's a combination of the stay-at-home orders in various states and also just people's own fear about venturing out and going somewhere. Lots of stuff was closed, but even if something was open, people were a little nervous about going out. So, you know, when you look at those TSA screening numbers, you just see like significant lows that we've never seen before. So there was a lot of that. And then, you know, I think it was something like 43 million people have traveled last year. And I think the number that we're seeing right now, I actually just got this, is 600,000. Huge difference.
Oh, yeah.
And people are sort of trying to figure out what they can do that will make them feel comfortable and like they don't have to stay in their houses all summer long, but also that they can still be safe and be in control of their plans and how they travel. And like you said, those people who said, you know, we're going all the way north and we're not stopping. That's a huge consideration for people, just that fear and wanting a vacation that you have control over.
Yeah, but does it still feel like a vacation if you're, you know, not stopping to get a hotel, you're literally sleeping in the car. What do you hear from people whose livelihoods depend on tourism? What's their sense about this?
It's going to be a really hard summer. It's going to be a hard year, in fact, because so many places, like a lot of resort towns, get the majority of their business in the 15 weeks between Memorial Day and Labor Day. And this year, for a lot of people, that's starting later. And even in the places where business did open just in time for Memorial Day, they didn't see a ton of traffic because you still have people who aren't willing to go stay in a hotel right now or who can't afford to. As we know, so many people have lost their jobs. So it's going to be a really tough summer. And we're seeing people just sort of a lot of businesses closing down, which is just a sad story in itself. And then a lot of people just living in fear and in limbo about whether they will be able to make it through the summer if they don't see more business in the coming weeks. For some people, it's sort of a decision that will be made by the end of June if they can survive or not.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about travel in the time of COVID-19. My guest right now is New York Times travel reporter Tariro Muzeziwa. She, I guess your livelihood kind of depends on this, does it not?
You know, in a way it does, but I'm also in a very fortunate position. In the way that it does depend on this is that I cover travel and I'm often on the road and reporting and covering the industry that way. And that industry has, you know, largely collapsed. But I am fortunate in that I am able to sort of work on stories in this time from home, we've been looking sort of at the future of travel and how people are going to be able to travel for now. I've been writing about, you know, people in resort towns right now and how they are trying to sort of cope with this moment. So I'm in a very fortunate position. I think there are a lot more people who've got it tougher right now.
Right. And I'm wondering if there's a sense about how much that it's not necessarily. I mean, the pandemic, of course, has affected some people directly. You know, they don't want to travel because they don't want to get sick. But then a lot of other people are out of work. They can't afford to travel.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you've got people who had like huge vacation plans for this summer who cannot afford to go on them and who have been fighting to get their refunds. Like that's something we've been seeing so much of, like people are unable to get their refunds and they're saying, but I'm out of work and I'm not getting this money back. And I think we're going to see a lot of that. We're also seeing a lot of legal representatives sort of taking on cases for people who are trying to get their refunds back. A lot of attorneys general in various states trying to help people get their refunds back. I think when we do come back from this, which won't be for a while, and on that, like we won't have international travel for a very long time. But when we come back from that, I think we'll sort of see more advocacy for travelers in terms of like what our rights are. Like, is it okay for you to sell me, you know, travel insurance that's not going to cover like something like this? Is that okay? I think those sort of conversations are happening in the background. And in this time, a lot of companies are having those conversations, trying to figure out new policies. So we'll see what travel looks like when we come back from this, but it will be very different.
And when you talk about international travel, not for a very long time, what do you mean by that?
So, you know, when you think about even this weekend, what we saw, people are comfortable sort of venturing somewhere for a weekend. They're okay with going somewhere maybe for like 4 days. People aren't comfortable going on a plane for a long ride to go to another country. But also as countries, we are seeing it in the states, right? Like states are opening at different paces. That's happening on an international level where countries are also opening at different times with different rules. I saw this weekend that Spain will be opening back up to international visitors in July. But what happens if France isn't open and you were planning to go on a trip that took you through Spain and France? There's a lot of consideration for things like that. And, you know, they're probably, you know, we can't have legislation that says, you know, you can't go from Oklahoma to Texas, but there will be legislation around, can you go, or at least rules rather around whether you can go between Oklahoma and France. And what does that look like? Does that mean you have to go through more security? Does it mean you'll need more health information to be shared? That type of stuff. That's the kind of thing that really all has to change. And it's already sort of in the works by different governments.
The president just shut down travel to and from Brazil, right?
He did. Yes.
So what does that mean for what, let's say people were already in Brazil? I don't know why they would be at this point, but does it mean they can't get back? What does that mean if you're traveling and you're stuck? That happened to some people, because of the outbreak, the way it unfolded so quickly.
Yes. So we did see a lot of that like in March, where people were already on their trips and they ended up being stuck. And it was sort of a combination of, you know, countries sending repatriation flights to bring their citizens back home. But also some people had to stay. You know, I've been in conversation with people who've been stuck like in Peru for months at this point, people who've been stuck in Morocco for months as well. And I think that will be the same thing with Brazil, where sort of the people who were close to an airport and were able to get on a flight and rush home were lucky. And then you'll have people who are stuck. You know, it's a really unfortunate situation and there's no like pleasant answer to it, unfortunately. But that's largely what we're seeing. And that makes people feel really uneasy, understandably. Yeah.
What's your sense? I mean, what's the prognosis for the cruise ship industry?
So cruises are such an interesting industry. I'm so like fascinated by people who are still booking cruises.
There are people who are still booking cruises?
there are lots of people who are booking cruises for, you know, for the fall.
Because are there deals out there or something? And
there are great deals. Okay. And I think, you know, overall, across the whole industry, people should expect to see great deals and companies trying to lure you back over the next several months. Mm-hmm. Those deals won't last forever, but you can count on them being around for the next like 5-6 months mm-hmm. because they'll want to bring people back. And for some loyal cruisers, those deals are deals you just can't pass on. But, you know, like we'll, you know, like we're seeing with airlines, cruises are also going to be upping their cleaning procedures and they'll be showing that off. This whole idea of like sanitization and being super clean, those things are just like the hottest things right now. Every email I get is like, we have new cleaning protocol. We've partnered with Lysol. We're doing this great cleaning thing. So there will be a lot of that. And, you know, and we've seen the cruise industry bounce back in the past from like huge issues, right? Like the start of norovirus, which I know is significantly smaller in scale compared to this. Mm-hmm. But it was the same type of thing where people were so petrified to go on a cruise ship. But the cruise industry has this huge PR machine and they're able to convince people that it's worth coming back on. And I think we can expect to see that. It seems like the biggest challenge for cruises will be sort of fighting the perception that getting on a cruise isn't a good idea. And as we can see from people already booking, that, you know, they're not turned off by it.
Kind of fascinated by that. Well, Tariro Muzezewa, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Anne. Have a great day.
You too. Tariro Muzezewa is a New York Times travel reporter. We're going to turn now to Ben Zanitsky of the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Long distance vacations are off the table for a lot of people right now. We wanted to spend a lot of this hour now talking about what you can do over the summer. Ben Zanitsky is a spokesman for the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thanks for having me, Anne. Great to be here.
You know, everyone's wondered when our library is going to open up again. Can you give us a thumbnail on what the plans are and what your expectations are, what you're shooting for?
Yeah, you know, we're looking closely at what other library systems are doing around the country and around the world. For now, we don't have a set reopening date. I don't think we can anticipate that we're going to be back to normal anytime soon with unlimited numbers of people in our 23 locations. Right now, we have just a small few of our locations open for curbside pickup service. This is kind of our new normal now, and I think we should expect that moving forward. It's going to be a slow, cautious way forward for us, and you know, safety has to be our top priority.
So they're opening restaurants and bars and that kind of a thing. Can you explain why? And you know, bookstores, I imagine.
Sure.
Why is it such a slow open for the library? What are the obstacles, I should say?
Sure. Well, the big difference between the library and a bookstore or a restaurant is you're not having customers bringing things back in and dropping them back off at the bookstores and the restaurants. So it's very important that we are taking this slow. We are quarantining returned materials for at least 72 hours. Because, you know, books carry with them an untold number of germs, and we're trying to get a grasp on, you know, how that works, how long the virus lives on those materials. Mm-hmm. We're working with Battelle right now to test the virus directly on library materials to get a better sense of just that. So we're taking it slow, but in the meantime, we are excited to offer curbside pickup service at 7 of our locations. And we're gonna keep an eye on it closely and move forward.
You are having your summer reading challenge this year. How has it changed? Tell us about it first, and then how it's changed.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard to plan for anything right now, but one thing we can all plan for is reading, and making reading a central part of our summer. We are going to be kicking off this coming Saturday, May 30th, our very first ever all digital, all online, all virtual summer reading challenge. It's going to be a little different this year. Obviously, when a lot of people think of our summer reading program, they think of performances and storytelling and music and dancing and animals. It's going to be a little different. We're going to be doing virtual performances, but at its core, this program has really always been about reading, which you can do from the comfort and safety of your own home.
What about kids? How are they going to get books from the library? What if they don't have access to the internet?
That's a great question. So at our curbside locations, we are going to be offering printed copies of our game boards. Our staff can help sign up customers who do not have internet access. We also have Wi-Fi hotspots in our 23 location parking lots.
Okay.
So we're doing what we can to bridge that digital divide, certainly.
Who can participate?
Anybody and everybody can participate. You know, it's so important for the kids, but it's also important for adults to model the behavior for the kids. So whether you are reading a book, whether you're reading a graphic novel, whether you are reading a news article or even a cereal box, reading is so critical. And we know that reading is a skill, just like swimming or riding a bike. And if you don't practice it regularly, you can actually lose it. So it is so critical, perhaps this summer more than ever before, after this bizarre and unusual school year, that we keep reading central to what we are doing as a community.
So much, about the library is sort of, it's like an iceberg, you know, most of it's underwater in a way. So much of what you do isn't just about books, it's about homework clubs, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. How do you see going forward adapting to the new normal if classes, you know, go back or even if they don't?
Gosh, you know, we're going to take it one day at a time, certainly. The last several months, have launched a homework help chat where students can get connected with our staff members in a live chat. But I think in the coming months and perhaps even the coming years, our focus is going to be shifting really more towards job help and responding to community needs as it relates to this COVID pandemic. And that's really going to be an economical help for a lot of adults.
Well, Ben Zanitsky of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, thanks for joining us today to talk about it. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, Ann.
We are going to continue our conversation about what to do this summer. Memorial Day weekend is the traditional kickoff to summer travel. Things have changed with COVID-19 afoot. Coming up, we're going to hear from the director of the Columbus and Franklin County Metro Parks. We'd love to hear from you. What are you doing to make summer vacation-y? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Memorial Day weekend, it's the traditional kickoff to summer travel. Last year, 43 million Americans took the tradition to heart over the holiday. But this year, holiday travel was expected to be so light that AAA skipped its annual forecast for the first time in 20 years. We're spending this hour talking about what you can do close to home in Central Ohio or how to travel safely. The parks have been popular. Tim Maloney is director of Columbus and Franklin County Metro Parks. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So there's been an increase in people visiting the parks, even though the bathrooms and those kind of facilities have been closed, right?
Well, we have seen higher than normal numbers at our parks, but our parks generally are well attended, and they're really built for social distancing, to use that term loosely that, you know, really we're here to get people outside, engaged in their own way to nature. And, you know, for 75 years, we've seen families gather at our parks, and that's what we're seeing today.
How many are open right now?
So all of our parks are open right now. They're open everywhere outside that can be open. So whether that's actually our restrooms are open, our trails, our scenic overlooks, things like that. What are closed are our nature centers and the programs we conduct.
Which is a big loss for people who really get into that, right?
Oh, yeah. Since we've been around, our programs have been, you know, one of our greatest assets to teach people things about nature they might not know. And the nature centers are world class. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a challenge not to have them. But even the nature center at Darby, there might not be a nature center, but there's still a herd of bison wandering around the nature center. So you can still see those.
How many parks are there? It seems like you do a pretty good job of adding on.
So we've got 20 parks right now, and we're on pace to get to 22 by the end of this levy cycle. Now, our 20th park, Quarry Trails, we haven't opened yet. We're hoping to get that open here by the end of the year.
What do you see, or how do you see people taking precautions as they use the parks?
So our operations director, who's our deputy director, he talks to me quite often. Our participants, and I'm going to say 99% of the people coming to our parks right now, are the best customers you could ever have. They're following the social distancing. They're following, you know, what's closed, what's not closed, and just doing the right thing. And then our staff, you know, educates that 1%. But it's really... you know, you hate saying it, but it's what the parks were built for, to find your own place in nature where mm-hmm. you can do your own thing. And it knock on wood, it's really been refreshing to see this many people take advantage of the parks they've had.
I am going to turn right now to Heidi Hetzel-Evans. She's Communication Manager for the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me.
What, you know, we were just talking about how there's been a little bit of an uptick in the metro parks in the central Ohio area. What about the state parks? How are they going?
Well, I have to agree with Tim. In general, our parks are pretty busy, but we did see some major increases a little earlier than usual for us. For example, our boat ramps and fishing areas were very popular. And I think with all but one of our Ohio State parks remaining open, I think folks certainly outside of central office, central Ohio, who may not have such a great large park agency like Franklin County Metro Parks to go to, we're seeing a lot of folks checking out their local state parks.
What in general can people not do that they're used to doing at state parks?
Well, as with some other park districts, most of our restrooms are closed. I think that is the biggest thing. All our trails are open. However, our nature centers, our picnic shelters are closed. And I think what folks don't always realize is our playgrounds are closed, too. We close those facilities where you have a lot of opportunities to touch and not necessarily be able to sanitize them for the next user. And something that may come as a surprise to some folks is we've always had a carry-in and carry-out policy for trash. Mm-hmm. And I think we've had such a lift in day use visitors that that's something that has surprised folks, too. So we ask you, bring your trash bag if you're going to come and picnic with us.
Okay. Some parks have cabins, though, that families can rent. Are those still open?
So our overnight facilities are opening slowly. May 21st, last Thursday, was the first day that camping opened in Ohio State Park Campground. With the exception of Hocking Hills, Hocking Campground remains closed. And we saw, we were very busy this weekend. And although our lodges have not reopened, our state park lodges, there's 9 across the state, they will be reopening in early June, but we do have 7 state park lodge facilities where their deluxe cabins also opened earlier this month. So we have some open. So we have some great cabins. So if you don't have the equipment to go camping, mm-hmm. These cabins are a great way of being out in nature without having to drag everything with you. They're fully furnished, multiple bedrooms, usually provide everything, you know, the campfire experience, but also sort of home away from home feeling. You get your Wi-Fi and you get your TV, you get your air conditioning.
So glamping, as they call it.
Yeah, sort of. It's Ohio's version of glamping.
Yeah.
Well, and then later on this summer, we're working to get all of those less furnished, less deluxe sites like our yurts and our camper cabins. They're not yet open, but we are hoping in our second phase of reopening that we will be reopening those later this summer.
Tim Maloney, what about your picnic shelters? Are those open?
So at Metro Parks, we have a variety. So we have our most common one we call Adirondacks, and they're very small. They have one or two picnic tables kind of built for a family size. So we've kept those open throughout this. Most of our larger reservable ones for, you know, family reunions or different like that, we've had closed down. And then we've got some of the in-between sizes that we've segregated into family-sized portions. And those seem to work well. They take sometimes a little extra supervision from our ranger staff to make sure everybody's doing everything right. And then all of that is, you know, built into our normal cleaning cycle and just general good practices.
You know, Heidi Hetzel-Evans, before I let you go, I mean, since you've seen an uptick in visitors, do you have the staff to manage that?
We do, and that's just one of the reasons why we're taking a cautious approach to reopening, or doing it in phases, because there are new protocols. For example, for camping, there are new camping protocols for both visitors and staff. Visitors are limited to family only at their site. They can't bring in other folks to visit them. Mm-hmm. They have to have a reservation. There are no walk-ins. We have at least one restroom open in every campground, but some of our shower houses are remained closed. So we really want folks to understand that we're looking at self-contained camping, and that that assists with both keeping everybody safe, but also make sure that our staff can keep up with the new protocols. Because, for example, a bathroom has to be sanitized at least 3 times a day. So we're looking at some serious increase in maintenance to keep our visitors safe.
And the same thing with opening up those cabins and things like that. It's a different protocol now, cleaning between visitors.
Exactly. Well, so I think in the hospitality industry, we're used to having to clean between visitors, correct?
Yeah.
However, I think the deeper cleaning that will need to be done is probably what's different here. And again, that's one of the reasons why we are making sure that we open slowly, so that we are always keeping our visitors' safety priority number one.
Well, Heidi Hetzel-Evans, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Oh, thanks for having us.
It's Heidi Hetzel-Evans. She's Communications Manager for the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Check it out. They're going to be opening up cabins in some state parks starting in June. Listeners, if you have a question or comment, Tim Maloney of the Columbus and Franklin County Metro Parks is staying with us, and we're going to be hearing from other people throughout the hour. We'd love to hear from you about what you're doing to manage this summer, to make it feel summery, vacation-y, that kind of a thing. 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tim, the Metro Parks have lots of bodies of water. What are the rules and regulations surrounding canoeing and fishing and that kind of a thing?
So without our programs there, there's really no shared equipment with the canoeing or the fishing or any of that. So if you're going to show up to fish, that once again, social distancing is kind of built into the fishing model. You kind of want to find your secret spot and stay there by yourself. So fishing's been very popular. With the high water, some of our canoeing access has been limited, but this weekend we saw a lot of people out on some of our quarry lakes and even on the Big Darby doing some canoeing. And once again, kind of a socially distanced activity. Our rangers are there to help and guide things. As we start to go into, say, phase two of this, you know, opening back up, I could see us opening some of our canoeing for the public access, maybe have a canoeing day where we put people out on canoes, then sanitize, then put more people out on canoes. That's what our programming staff's working on right now.
Gotcha. Another way to connect with the natural world is through the lens of science, and Joining us now is Dr. Frederick Bertley. He is president and CEO of COSAI. Welcome to the show.
How are you, Anne? Always a pleasure to be on.
You bet. Thanks for joining us. Tell us about COSAI Connects, what you're doing to stay connected to the community.
Yeah, so we shut down March 17th, like many other organizations, but we wanted to make sure there was a great COSAI kind of impact and suite of resources for the community. And so we launched this thing called COSAI Connects, which has just been amazing. You can do everything from our interactive video conferencing to we have science challenges, which are really fun things that you can do at home with your kids. A lot of them are connected to the curriculum for that K-12 space, so as kids are out of school, they can come to COSAI and get some science stuff that's relevant to what they need to learn in school. We got a whole bunch of great videos, all things science, and then you can even do some 3D virtual tours of our exhibits, including the dinosaur exhibit.
How are you doing that? I mean, how's it? Is it, are you using drones or anything?
No, so we actually we've been working on this for a year and a half, kind of way pre-pandemic, saying that, you know, these exhibits are really cool, but not everybody has the chance to come to Columbus and see it. So how do we give them, you know, the best experience, of course, is to come into the museum, but how do we give them a great experience considering technology is so good? So we bring in people. They don't use a drone, but they use just a 3D camera. It's on this really cool kind of portable tripod, if you will, and you're able to just capture the exhibit really nicely. But it's not just that, Anne. Not only do you capture the exhibit and you can do a virtual tour, but we can augment it now by having all these activated things you just click on with your mouse, and up comes all this more, you know, description of Tyrannosaurus Rex or some more history or whatever you wanted to know. So it's our exhibits, we like to say, on steroids digitally.
I grew up with, one of the, you know, watching TV and Mr. Science would come on and we'd gather our equipment and, you know, if it was a jar and a piece of string and some baking soda, whatever it was. What kind of materials do kids need to participate in the activities that are available through COSAI?
I'm glad you say that. It was very important for our team to make sure that anybody who can get on this digitally through their home or handheld had stuff in their kitchen cabinets, bathrooms, or basement. So we don't have anything that's super hard to get or that's really difficult that most people wouldn't have or is really expensive. Almost all of our stuff can be done with what is in your home right now, which makes it accessible.
Are the activities going to change over time?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we constantly have daily activities. Every day when you go to our website, you'll see a new activity that our team curates and puts up there. But then all of them are listed, so if you want to see them all archival, you can go through. We literally have content that can keep you busy 365 days a year at this point. It's really cool.
You know, that it does sound cool, and we'll have a link on our website for people if they're looking for these activities. But there's nothing like going to COSAI. When's it going to open up?
Yeah, I mean, we're close to having a date, and we don't have it yet. You know, you saw what happened this weekend with, you know, people getting rightfully so excited to want to hang out. But then, you know, a few peaks again and increases in transmission. So we're towing the party line.
Yeah.
But we're towing the party line a little more than other people because not only are we a cultural institution that wants to open, but we're a science center. And so, unfortunately, we can't turn our back to what the experts in the scientific community and the medical community are saying. So we will open, and we'll open as soon as possible. But we really are looking for that green light where science says, okay, here's our best guess. Go for it.
And what about, when you're talking about when you do open up, what are you talking about? Are you talking about how many people are allowed in at a time? Are you talking about how you are constantly cleaning it, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, combination of everything. Well, one cool thing is we're 330,000 square feet, so we're a big building. So even with social distancing, we could still have a pretty great crowd in here. Now, we have no idea if the line's going to be from our front door to Jerusalem or if people are going to be gun-shy and they'd rather be outside running around playing versus going inside a building. But we have a very big building, and so we will be practicing social distancing, but we can accommodate a great crowd. But to your point about cleaning, we are ratcheting up. We're always like most places, a very clean institution.
Sure.
But we have increased it dramatically. We'll be supplying masks. We'll have gloved staff. And we'll be cleaning all the hands-on interactive stuff constantly throughout the day.
Well, Dr. Frederick Bertley, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Ms. Fisher, always a pleasure. I look forward to being on your show again soon.
Me too.
Please,
I hope you, someday.
I'd love to see you at COSAI sometime soon.
You bet. Dr. Frederick Bertley, president and CEO of COSAI. Also still with us is Tim Maloney, Director of Columbus and Franklin County Metro Parks. We're going to continue our conversation if you want to join it. What are you doing this week, this summer in Central Ohio or beyond? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Memorial Day weekend is the traditional kickoff to summer travel. Last year, 43 million Americans took the tradition to heart over the holiday. This year, holiday travel was expected to be so light that AAA skipped its annual forecast for the first time in 20 years. We're spending this hour talking about what you can do close to home in Central Ohio. Still with us is Tim Maloney, the director of Columbus and Franklin County Metro Parks. Hey, Tim, Metro Parks also runs a golf course. Is it open?
Yeah, so Blacklick Woods Golf Course out on the east side, which is an 18-hole championship course, a 9-hole kind of learning course, and then a 3-hole educational course. We shut down kind of early on, but then once those restrictions were lifted, what we decided to do was open it up to the public in a very safe way, where you could play free during the early stages of this. And just last Thursday, we went back to more normal operations with greens fees and tee times and all that. But our 9-hole course and our 3-hole course are, as always, free to Franklin County residents. And you can come out and play anytime in a new normal of social distancing on a golf course.
I didn't know they were free anyways.
It's a great, I wouldn't say a secret because as many rounds of play we have, but outside of that current pandemic, it's a great way to either introduce yourself to golf or get back into the sport of golf or play it if you've never played. Because on the 9-hole course, not only is it shorter and more open, we've got larger holes, so it's easier to putt into. And with no greens fees, there's really no pressure to get out there and, you know, feel like you have to be, you know, Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus to keep up with the crowd.
Well, heaven knows I've never thought that. But one of the things I love about golf is walking. Walking the course. Some people, I think there was a famous title, A Good Walk Spoiled, but it's part of the fun for me. Do you have to use a golf cart?
No, and actually that's exactly what you said. That's the beauty of it. And on the 9-hole course, come out and play 2 or 3 holes, you know, spend, you know, an hour and, you know, walk your first 3 and then hike on off and go about the rest of your day. So if you want to rent a cart, we'd be glad to rent you one. But to keep the expenses down, we want everybody to play golf at Blacklick.
Do you need to make a reservation for a tee time?
On the championship course on busy days, yes, we highly recommend that. But on the 9-hole course and the 3-hole course, it's first come, first serve.
Okay. And what kind of precautions are being taken there?
So on the traditional hole, what we've done is we've kind of eliminated that, and we've put a high-tech pool noodle inside the hole, so your ball only falls like a quarter of an inch down and sticks there. So we want you to play, keep your distance. If you're, you know, going to be walking, it's easy to keep apart. If you're going to be in a cart, we ask you to, you know, use your own cart and separate. And really don't pressure the group in front of you. Allow the time between tee times to really stay spread out and just enjoy the place.
Are you spreading out the tee times more?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and I should know it off the top of my head, and I don't, but we've added minutes between each, you know, regularly scheduled tee time.
Usually it's they get beyond the first, the next, they get to the next hole, and that's when you let them go?
Yes. We don't want people bunching up.
But now you're timing them. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the Metro Parks and what kind of events or things to do out there. And I'm wondering about geocaching, where you can look for items. Is that still going on?
Oh, yeah. And really, you can go to our website, metroparks.net, and it talks a little bit about our geocaching opportunities. But there's many online resources of different geocaches throughout Central Ohio, not just in our metro parks. And that's, you know, we see a lot of families in that. We see a lot of individuals. And once again, it's not really a big group activity, even though hundreds, if not thousands of people do it. But they're doing it in their own way.
And maybe you should describe what geocaching is to people who aren't familiar with it.
So how I like to describe geocaching is it is a modern day scavenger hunt. So somebody places a cache somewhere in a park. And here in Metro Parks, we register them. We know where they are. So they're not in a sensitive area or somewhere they might damage. And inside that cache might be some knickknacks, might be a sticker, might be a stamp pad. And really use your coordinates either through a map or through online sources to find that geocache. So it's not sitting wide out in the open. They're a little bit hidden, and you have to interpret some of the clues to find these. And you know, some of our geocaches get walked by thousands of times a day and nobody knows they're there. Mm-hmm. You know, they're kind of hidden out in the open, if that makes sense.
It's like an Easter egg hunt, sort of.
Yes.
It's a lot of fun. Inniswood Metro Parks, Metro Gardens, are those open?
Oh, absolutely. And even early on, before the flowers started blooming, we saw a lot of people come out to the park. And the timing couldn't have been any more challenging for staff because we're in the process of replacing a 30-plus-year-old irrigation system. So we've got visitors, we've got work going on, and we're trying to get ready for, you know, the spring flowers to bloom. But I can say now that we're in today, the flowers are in full bloom, and it's a spectacular place. So if you haven't been to Inniswood, get out to Westerville and enjoy what I consider to be one of the best botanical gardens there is.
You know, it sort of surprised me that the numbers were up as much as they were because it was such a crummy spring, in my opinion. It was cold and rainy.
Yeah. And so here we found a new type of park visitor, Ann, and I'm broadcasting this for the first time ever. On the rainiest, coldest days, we saw people coming to our parks in their car, park in a great parking spot, and eat their lunch or just sit there. And I think, you know, and this is me with no professional training whatsoever, I think our metro parks are a little bit of normalcy for everybody. Everybody in Central Ohio has been to a metro park. They have their favorite. And the fact that our gates never closed, that we stayed open throughout this, I think brought that normalcy that people really are trying to find. And, yeah, so on rainy days, we had customers. On non-rainy days, we had a lot of customers.
One thing is there are restrictions for pets, right?
Yes. So it depends what park, depends what trail. You know, early on in this, we were a little more liberal with our pets policy, but the safest thing to say is most of our parks allow dogs in some way, shape, or form as long as they're leashed. Blendon Woods is kind of one of the outlier, not Blendon Woods, Rocky Fork, in that we built an off-leash trail at Rocky Fork. So if you've got Fido and he's well-behaved, we've got trails there that your dog can stay close to you as long as they're on your commands. Then we've got dog parks throughout our park system, you know, fenced-in areas for dogs to enjoy.
We have an email from Candy. She wrote that she'll make this summer more vacation-y by stepping up her gardening skills as well as making my patio more decorative and comfortable. As poolside reading isn't an option, I will double up my reading efforts on my very own patio. She says, also, I am thrilled that the summer reading program will commence this Saturday. And I bring up Candy's email because also joining us is Brian Griffith. He's lead designer for Easy Living Pools. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you for having me on.
I think it was you left me a voicemail talking about the increase in orders for swimming pools because so many people are staying home, right?
That's correct. Yeah, last week you guys were talking about kind of the real estate market and how that's having some kind of unforeseen changes to it, and we're seeing the same kind of thing in our swimming pool market. Our company typically does about, you know, 40-some pools a year. This year, we're probably going to do anywhere from 50 to 60. And the phone is really kind of really going off the hook right now for people interested in pursuing a pool.
You know, pools aren't cheap, especially in-ground pools. What are people telling you about their purchases?
Just in terms of what they're spending?
Or just are they telling you, hey, we can't go anywhere this summer, so we're going to put a, or maybe next summer, too, we don't know. What are they telling you, that they're inspired by the pandemic?
Oh, definitely, definitely. What I'm hearing a lot of is that, you know, hey, we were planning a big trip to Disney this year, or they were going to go, you know, travel someplace that required, you know, air travel, and that they're really seeing themselves staying home, and so taking those budgets and really shifting them more inward to their home. A lot of people, too, are refinancing their homes at these, like, amazing 3% rates and taking a little bit of equity out of their home. And so they're getting a lower monthly rate for a little more and throwing in an in-ground pool while they're at it.
Well, that's a luxury for most people in any event. But I'm wondering how you meet the demand that much.
Well, we're a site construction company, and so we've got quite a few crews that kind of cover everything start to finish. That's where we're a little bit different in that we really quarterback people from start to finish, all the way through. And not many people realize that there's just looking at the design and feasibility do you have enough room in your yard,
yeah,
all the way through getting a permit and all of that. And so we've got, because we're a site construction company, we've got a lot of different people on our team that kind of help navigate those waters. And it all kind of starts with our design center, where we talk to people and learn more about their project.
And you do fiberglass pools, right? So they're like, it's different. It's
correct.
Quicker. Yeah.
We've kind of invested a lot into our equipment and our training into these fiberglass pools, which are manufactured just like the shell of a boat. So there's a lot of different designs. We picked two manufacturers, kind of like Ford and Chevy in the market.
Mm-hmm.
One is called Imagine Pools. The other one's Thursday Pools. And we install them in the ground. What's great about these things is that there's an amazing assortment of colors and shapes and seats and sun shells. And we literally dig the hole that morning, and by lunchtime it's in the ground and we're starting our plumbing work. So the speed of them is what allows us, just by virtue of the shell being ready to go, is why we can do 40 or more every year.
Well, Brian Griffith, you kind of inspired this program in the first place. Thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Brian Griffith, lead designer for Easy Living Pools. Still with us, Tim Maloney. He's director of Columbus Park, Columbus and Franklin County Metro Parks. Tim, you guys are working on opening your 20th park, Quarry Trails. Tell us about that.
So Quarry Trails is our newest endeavor for a lot of reasons. One, it's an old limestone quarry that the northern half is still in quarrying. At one time, it was the largest quarry in the United States of America.
Wow.
The Ohio Stadium, State House, every road in downtown Columbus was built from rocks out of this hole. And we did something unique here, too. We partnered with a private developer, and part of this, several hundred-acre parcel will be, like 70 acres of it, is going to be residential, a little bit of mixed use, some restaurant, different things like that. So there'll be a neighborhood inside of a park. And this park's going to be pretty unique. Rock climbing, some white water, great access to the Scioto River. It's going to have the same amenities you see in most of our parks with great trails. It's got a 20-foot waterfall. It is an utterly amazing sight, and the beauty of it is it's right at the Scioto River and Trabue Road. I mean, it's in the middle of everything. I think it's within 5 miles of 350,000 people.
So if it's a residential and mixed use inside of a park, will anybody be able to use it?
Absolutely. It'll be open only 365 days a year, Ann.
Oh, 365 days a year. A 20-foot waterfall.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. Now, I have to say this because I get all excited talking about it. The park is not open yet. It is under development. So please don't try to visit the park today.
Okay.
We're hoping for getting parts of it open here later this year. Oh, it's going to have single-track mountain biking. You can stand at one spot and have a vista of downtown Columbus. It's just an amazing sight that I get very excited every time talking about it, about when we get this park open to the public.
Yeah, I can't wait to visit it. And when is it going to open again?
Hopefully this fall.
Okay.
Now, with everything going on, some of our construction can be a little bit delayed, but we think we can get a couple of the sites open, maybe the mountain biking and some of the access to water along the Scioto, or it's got several lakes inside of it as well.
Well, Tim Maloney, thanks for hanging out with me this hour. I really appreciate your time today, and I hope you have a great summer.
Oh, right back at you, and thanks for having us on.
Tim Maloney is director of Columbus and Franklin County Metro Parks. Thanks to everybody for listening. If you want to post your ideas for the summer on our Facebook page, I'd appreciate it. Thanks for listening again. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.